So let's get started with a little bit of Zoom etiquette. Before we do, though, to the Zoom folks, I would like to just say that you may notice a little bit of flashing on your screen. A lot of troubleshooting has been done. That continues. Something about the graphics driver. I was going to say that like I knew what I was talking about, but I didn't succeed there. So anyway, please be patient. We apologize for any disturbance. So at 10:30,
as I listen, how appropriate of two people who traveled to England to reunite with a family member, and how wonderful it is that you are right here with us. So this morning I'm going to begin with a little game called Who Said This? So we're going to read them through, and then I'm going to see if you could identify any of those who this quote, what person said this? So we have first, the soft overcomes the hard. Number two, whoever wants to save their life will lose it. Three, I know that I know nothing. Anybody relate to that one? Number four, to lead people, walk behind them. Number five, the last will be first, and the first will be last. Number six, the one who conquers himself is the greatest warrior. So, any guesses on number one? Jesus, okay. Any other guesses? All right, so we're going to leave that there. How about number two? Jesus, okay. Number three, I know that I know nothing. Okay. Number four, to lead people, walk behind them. Okay. Number five, the last will be first, and the first will be last. And the last one, the one who conquers himself is the greatest warrior. Okay, so we can put up the slide with the answers and then you could look. Yeah. Which one were you right on, Patrice? Number six, the Buddha, yes. So what do all of these sayings have in common? Humility. You can put in the chat on Zoom. Selflessness. Letting go. Wisdom. Surrender. Anything else? Anything in the chat?
Putting others first.
Is there anything in the chat? No. Okay. So what do you notice also what they may have in common? Oh, we just kind of spoke into that a bit. I'm somewhere on flight. What do they stir within you? Anything? Confusion. Something to aspire to? What did you say, Linda? Self-evolution, Rose? Inspiration. Not being too attached. So what if they all can be true? What I want to speak into, though, is that these sayings do something. They disrupt our thinking. They contain paradoxical languages and aphorisms. They're not just sayings that you find in a fortune cookie after a meal at an Asian restaurant. They were purposeful to disrupt our thinking, the way that maybe we would normally think, to make us pause and reflect. Each one of these individuals are a wisdom sage. Kirsten spoke of wisdom. And they are a particular type of a sage of wisdom. In the book, Seeing Jesus Again for the First Time, by the author Marcus Borg, he speaks into two types of wisdom. One is conventional wisdom, and the other one is alternative or a subversive wisdom, which could also be the road less traveled, the narrow way. And so as we look at alternative wisdom, each one of those sages, Lao Tzu, Buddha, Socrates, Jesus, and there's many more, were sages of the alternative wisdom, meaning it was the wisdom where that we are called to live from the Spirit of God within us and to live from that deep well of compassion that we experience when we are in that experience of Spirit, of God, of the divine, by whatever name you call it, in that mystery. That we are to live from the inside out, from the allness and fullness. And on the other hand, conventional wisdom, it is the dominant consciousness of every culture, of every society. It shapes how we see the world, and it shapes how we see ourselves and how we see others. It is so ingrained, it is taught. And so I want to spend some time on some common threads of conventional wisdom. And so there are three common threads, no matter what culture, society, that you could see that is prevalent within conventional wisdom. It is what is taught. Number one, it tells us how to live, what to value, and what leads to having a successful and good life. Two, it is based on a system of reward and punishment. And three, it has deep social and psychological consequences. So let's just take a look at each one of these. So on the first one, it tells us how to live, what to value, what leads to a good life. It's all those little rules and maybe big rules, spoken and unspoken, from etiquette. Don't eat with your mouth open. Don't wear a baseball cap at the table. Say please and thank you. Don't take too much. Leave some for others. Now, I'm not saying that these are all what things not to be mindful of, but then we get into things like to be successful, it means that you have to have lots of stuff, lots of material, a big house. And again, nothing wrong with our houses and things. It comes down to the consciousness. Do I define myself as successful if I only drive a certain car, live in a certain neighborhood, and wear designer brand clothing? And if I don't, am I less than? Do I abide by the rules of my family in order to be loved, to be liked, to be considered worthy? It tells us the rules and the values of what body types are the best, right? We're taught that you have to be the best. There's not enough. So yes, it's good not to, maybe. I don't know, maybe we should try all chewing with our mouth open and see if we have we been conditioned to be offended? I don't know. Although I really don't want to see what's in your mouth, to be really honest with you. And then what about the rewards of the system of reward and punishment? How many of you remember hearing bad, good, be a good little girl, be a, you know, that's bad? Or even we would speak to our pets, bad, bad, down. And I cringe when I hear that. Because people internalize that there's something wrong with me. And so then we learn how to adapt to fit in. And most importantly, in order for me to receive love, I have to act this way for my family. I have to do this when I'm in for my this teacher. I have to do this to fit in here, to get the job interview. And then slowly, what's happening? We are living from the outside, not from the inside. Vinny. So Vinny says this comes from our parents, and in an Italian, I'm just doing a short condense, and that if you're raised in an Italian family, it comes from being rewarded with food, or punished with food. Okay, you don't eat, you do eat, you get what you like, you don't get what you like. Any other cultures besides Italian have that with food? Okay, I see a lot of hands here. So I would say, yes, it does come from our parents, and it comes much deeper, century-old ways of being. It's so insidious. We have the reward and punishment in schools, good grades, bad grades, who gets in and who doesn't. Our whole system, prison system, is based on punishment. And other countries may have us, and some in the United States, but it's more the exception than the rule, based on, you know, of rehabilitation and based on compassion rather than cruelty. So we see this, and guess where else the good and bad or reward and punishment shows up? Not just in our families, not just in our schools, not just, yes, yes, it seeped into religion. So in the Western faith traditions, it's projected onto God. What is it? You know, we have to abide by these set of moral rules. I mean, it's good not to steal. I'm not saying that, but it's based on a God that, you know, if we led this life, then we will be on the final judgment day, bum, bum, you will be rewarded and loved and favored. And also, you know, I mean, you know, it's kind of like projecting Santa Claus, the naughty and nice list for God. And it's not just the Western faith traditions. We see it in some form in Eastern traditions with karma. So it may be a little less of a deity, but, and then within unity, we have cause and effect. So we see, you know, our energy and who we are being has consequences. Would we all agree that that's true? But how it becomes a reward system, even within unity and punishment, we've come a long way, baby, they say. But people would be like, oh, what were you? Somebody would come with an illness. I'm not kidding you, and I may have shared this, but, I mean, it's happened to me. But also, I remember one of the trainers of prayer chaplains years ago, Leilani Burt, she had gotten an infection, a really serious infection, staph infection throughout her body that came from getting a scratch on her hand. And here she is the trainer of prayer chaplains at the time, and someone in her community say, so what have you been thinking? Not, I'm here to love you. So it's even insidious within new thought. Yeah, I'm not kidding. It was hardcore cause and effect. So there is something to be looked at in that law of cause and effect. But it's just the point of how much through centuries this reward and punishment even shows up, not in just our institutions, but the institution, I mean, of government, but in within religion. And then we look at the social and psychological consequences. So socially, you know, we are indoctrinated as far as, again, all the values, what's good and what's bad, how to be socialized, how we, in order to fit in, to perform, we have to perform a social way. And within that, socialization within our family, within our culture, within our society, what develops, it goes back to something you said, Vinny, that by the time, you know, we're 5 or 6 or 7, we develop the inner voice, the inner critic, the inner judge. We take it on. And it is the voice, it is the critical adult voice. I believe Marcus Bohr calls it the superego that is in our heads. You didn't measure up, you're too lazy, you're too this, you're not enough this. And lots of time we can trace it back to, I mean, how many times have you heard even beautiful things, like sometimes it just spills out and maybe it's something your parents or a family member said. Or, you know, again, the insidiousness of it, you know, the belief that you hold when you make a mistake. Like even in sharing of the bags dropping, you know, how you got a little hard on yourself, right? That the inner critic that we don't even realize comes up. So we develop that inner voice, not an autonomous voice. We do have an autonomous voice, but it's just recognizing it. And then the psychological effects, what happens? It affects our self-esteem. We're in this constantly having to perform. And we lose ourselves and we question our worthiness. And that's really something to really hold stock of. We're afraid to maybe show our light. Is it safe to show our light? Is it safe to be seen, to be heard? Is it safe to beat to a different beat or a different drum? That is the path I have chosen. I have. You know, whether it's being seen of going, you know, it's come a long way, and I've shared this, you know, from my childhood faith tradition to being woo-woo. I kind of like being woo-woo. It's fun being woo-woo. It's freeing being woo-woo. But for so many years, what I carried, you know, even from when I was teaching and we would be in the teacher's lounge And they would all be talking about, excuse the expression, but okay, I'll change it. The pain in the neck, whatever, Susie, Mary, whatever, you know, going on, dun, 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 and this one, dun, 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 dun. And I'm like, I'm eating my lunch. And like, we're supposed to be teaching these people, these souls. Like, I don't want to participate in this. That's me. So then I go and say, I'm going to go eat in my room by myself. So what do I get called? Antisocial. No, I'm not social. I just don't want to participate in how you're socializing. Right? And so this happens again and again. And then there is this thing in the unity movement where we're getting growing pains at one point. And I'm like, yeah, but is this in alignment with truth? Now, I'm not saying I'm always in that alignment, and I question it, and I question it like I did in my family, like I did in the school. And then I have some unity folks feeling uncomfortable when they're saying at one point I'm in this meeting and unity has to be the biggest, fastest moving in the whole world. And I'm like, but why? Isn't that like your house is bigger than my house? I'm wondering if Jesus walked around that my ministry has to be the biggest, best, badass ministry. No, I don't think that was his message. And I was so shy, and I got looks, and I would not open my mouth again for a long time. For a long time. This is going back years ago. You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong, but I'm saying, and now I'm getting to own that I see vision and I am constantly desiring to evolve, and today I am not apologizing for it. It may not be what's alive for you, and that's okay. And I'll let you be you. Anybody relate to this road less traveled? Yeah. And so sometimes we were just having a lovely conversation I was having with Linda this morning, you know, where we're constantly questioning, you know, I had this aha, like, you know, why aren't there more people coming to unity? It is the narrow path. It makes you think, it makes you look at yourself, and looking at yourself isn't always very comfortable. It calls you into action. It doesn't just say, I love you, and then I can go out into the parking lot and cut you off. It doesn't, it's little, but I'm just saying. I know we see it all the time. That's why I said it. Or, you know, if they're giving free stuff away, I'm going to trample over you. Because that's mine, bitch. I'm just saying. I mean, it is. It's not said, but it's how we kind of show up a little bit here and there. I know Vinny's like, I think you're going too far, so I'll take it back down. But we laugh, but it does have these effects for so long. The perfectionism, having to have it all right. If I don't have it, if I don't say the right thing, they're going to reject me. I lived with that for so many years, and it still rears its head. But then when we get to wake up, and this is the world that Jesus stepped into. Before we go into that a little bit more, so I named a whole bunch of them, but I just want to make sure we look at the harmful consequences of conventional wisdom. Number one, judgment is the way to be. We judge ourselves, we judge others. That teacher's room is filled with judgment. How many family gatherings? Who didn't do what they were supposed to do in your family, or they fell short in your family, or I'm so ticked off at this one and that one, or so on and so on. I think you get it. Comparisons, measuring up. Well, I may not be too attractive, but at least I'm more attractive than this one. I mean, these are the things that happen. Or there's not enough. I have to compete. And then it becomes, Marcus Borg actually calls, I have concentration on self, but he calls it actually selfishness. Not in the sense that we would think it would be, like taking it all, but that we become so preoccupied about the self. What will they say? What am I going to do? How am I going to say it? Blah, 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 so on and so on, that all we can do is focus, focus, focus here. Yes, we are to focus here, but not to the point where we are not living our true selves. And it lacks vision. We're not carbon copies. Yes, we are all emanations of the one power and one presence, God, Spirit, the birther of life. We all are sacred. But each one of us has our own soul print, our unique way of expressing. And how sad it is when we drown that out. And then we have, so there's lack of vision there, and there's conformity, and that's a way of control. And then it leads to anxious striving. Anxiety is at an all-time high. One of the most common prevalent diagnoses is all different forms of anxiety. And so we just say, you know, like, okay, yes, we know divine idea is in, whether it is in alternative or traditional medicine for it, but how about let's looking at how we are showing up with one another and how we are living in a society. Let's start there. So it is into this world that Jesus steps into as a sage of alternative wisdom, of the road less traveled. And he dares to speak, to disrupt through his parables. He was an incredible storyteller. His parables are incredible stories to help disrupt common wisdom, to make you think. He doesn't teach you how to think, but he asks you to think, to look, to go within. He is the way shower, and he uses the rich symbolism in the stories from the Hebrew scriptures, where he rides in to Jerusalem on that last Passover on a donkey, the meekness, speaking truth to power, to calling people to live from the kingdom within, to ground yourself so fully and so deeply. The God of his understanding as a spirit person was a God of compassion, not of punishment, but of beauty and fullness and of abundance. For even the lilies of the field do not fret or toil as they surrender, knowing that they live in this energetic resonance. And so it is with his one-liners and aphorisms that he spoke over and over, not just one time as they are maybe, and not all together as it is showed in the New Testament. Because if he group them all together, then each one loses its own impact to really sit and to savor What does this mean? You know, when I asked all of you, what do these mean? You were all right because it was speaking to your soul from within. It's not for me to teach you what this means. And so when we follow the way, as you hear, you know, the first will be last. And if the blind leads the blind man, will they not fall into a ditch? What does that mean? Is it literal? No, it's rich with symbolism. So as you, if you so choose, you know, we will maybe be sharing some of these rich, you know, parables to look at what is the symbolism? How is my thinking and the conventional wisdom being disrupted? How is it speaking within? Let me let that speak to me. And so the path that Jesus demonstrated was the path of living like I shared from the Spirit of God within, from that font of wisdom. He was brilliant as a wisdom teacher, brilliant as a storyteller, to get people to pay attention, to live from that heart of compassion. There's two great teachings, or two things that he spoke of over and over again. It was about living from within, from the heart of compassion, and he was all about the transformation of consciousness. He was a consciousness teacher about evolving, dying to the old, not only to transform into something, but to be resurrected to new life. And so let us follow Jesus as a wisdom sage of the ages. And we hold a space for all the other wisdom sages. And so let us take this moment now to be still. To breathe consciously, mindfully, allowing your breath to soften, allowing your body to relax, allowing yourself to let go in this moment. Sensing what is alive within you right here in this moment. Allowing the paradoxes of whatever is alive. Gratitude, joy, sadness, perhaps some confusion, frustration. Sense the breath of life flowing now ever so freely and fully in and out of your heart. Allowing your breath that is being breathed from your heart to flow deep and slow, breathing into the count of six. And breathing out to the count of six. Deep and slow. Sensing warmth flowing, caressing your heart, opening, 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 saying yes, I open my heart. Let me enter the kingdom within. Let me sense the quickening of spirit, the wisdom of Jesus, the wisdom of Buddha, the wisdom of Lao Tzu, the wisdom of Socrates, the wisdom of the road less traveled. From that kingdom within. And simply asking the wisdom of the spirit within, the wisdom of your heart and soul, how am I being guided to live from my authentic self, to shine my light with compassion, with joy, with creativity, with meaning and purpose, whether it is writing a thank you note, sending origami heart through prayer, through serving others, whatever it is, allow that wisdom to rise from that kingdom within, in the silence, stillness, as the music continues. Savoring whoever wants to save their life will lose it. What meaning does that hold for you in your life? The last will be first, and the first will be last. How does that speak to your soul? The soft overcomes the hard. Where am I being called to soften? And what meaning does the one who conquers himself or herself is the greatest warrior? overcome. So we let these wise words not only fill our hearts today, but in the days ahead, living the questions, living from the heart of compassion, living from the inside out. And so we let it be. Breathing in and out in conscious awareness, noticing your body, perhaps wiggling your fingers and your toes, stretching your arms up high and wide if that feels right. And when you are ready, slowly open your eyes and prepare to receive the beauty of Rose and Greg. Okay.
I'm so sorry for ruining the moment.
That's okay. That's okay. So we get to have some stillness and beauty.